You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. You're listening to On the Couch, with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
And you are officially on the couch with me, Dr. Michelle. Every Friday, as you always are, 11 in the morning, and that's Pacific Standard Time, so welcome wherever you're listening around the world to LA Talk Radio, the country's most listened to internet talk station, because we get to say what we want. And as always, I have a wonderful guest today, and I invite you all, anybody, to call in if you'd like, ask questions, and share your experiences. And of course, you can email me if you would like to have an instant answer or response for any questions you may have, also for my guest and myself. And that's, of course, that's that email address that's linked up right here to the radio station, which is docmichelle@aol.com. That's docmichelle@aol.com. Go ahead and write us if you'd like, because we'll be listening. We'll be here. We'll be listening and waiting for you. And of course, like I said, if you would like to call in live, you have any questions or comments, lots of lines open here. 323-203-0815. Now let me tell you about this here. We've all wondered, thousands of years, Plato, writings, information, is there an afterlife? Is there an afterlife? Well, according to a Gallup poll, approximately 8 million Americans claim to have had near-death experiences, NDEs as they call them, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. I don't know if you've ever experienced something like that out there, listeners, or if you've had a close call, a brush with death, and you've had a near-death experience. Have you ever experienced any of those symptoms? You've seen the light, as they say. Well, my guest today is psychotherapist and author Mary Jo Rapini. She's going to tell us about that. She has an extraordinary book out. It's called Is God Pink? And Mary Jo experienced a near-death experience after suffering a cerebral aneurysm. That's kind of scary. Now, Mary Jo's been interviewed on the Today Show and the Discovery Health Center. You may have seen her, just to name a few. She was also featured in Dr. Jeffrey Long's best-selling book, It's the Evidence of an Afterlife, The Science of Near-Death Experiences, Scientific Medical Information that he gathered. Mary Jo, by the way, will also be featured on Oprah's TV network next year to talk about her book and to share her mission of empowering women and the men who love them. She is a psychotherapist, so she's an expert at all that stuff. So here's my... good morning. You probably thought I forgot you. You have so many credits, Mary Jo.
Yeah, well, thank you. No, I knew you would get to me eventually, Michelle. You have to warm them up.
There you know. Go. There you go. I can't get it. There's so much going on with you. You're an amazing lady, and you help so many people. And, you know, I think that this book is profound because it really shares your particular experience. And also, you know, it's based on a lot of scientific information which has been gathered for years and years. And your experience was typical, as reported by a lot of near-death experiences that people have had. So we're going to talk about your experience.
Okay.
Can you sort of share with people how it unfolded originally? I mentioned that you had an aneurysm, and you're so young. That's scary.
That's right. Well, yeah. I think what was so incredible about the whole thing is my chance of death was 60 to 65%. Aneurysms are really treacherous when they burst, and mine bursted in the gym. And it,
oh, my gosh.
Because I had been working out, there was such a heavy blood flow that...
Right.
If you get, you know, in that intracranial space, you have you have room for about 10 cc's of any fluid, and blood is a toxin to the brain.
Oh.
And I had about 60 cc's, which is almost 2 ounces. They predict that actually
That's
was
amazing.
In that space. So.
Yeah.
I basically was working out, and I felt a pop in the back of my head in an incredible pain that is there's just nothing else like it.
Oh,
and it really brought me to my knees. I started sweating, and all of a sudden my vision went black except for a little bit of light coming in peripheral in the side of my vision.
Hmm.
And it sounded like I was underwater. I couldn't hear anymore. And I kept thinking I had this experience called a vasovagal. I was a nurse prior to becoming a psychotherapist. And so I was thinking, you know, when your body becomes very ill like that, suddenly your brain goes through a checklist and it tries to help you decide, like come up with clues about what's going on.
Yes.
And I thought if I just got some water, so I sort of stumbled. I really couldn't walk well. I stumbled over to the water fountain, and when I pushed down on the lever, my right side just started seizing, and then I thought, oh my God, I think I've broken my neck.
Yes.
So I just laid down, and then you know, helped some of the work people that managed the Gold's Gym came back, and I told them they better call an ambulance. And,
So they called the ambulance and took you away. And did they diagnose you right away with a cerebral aneurysm?
Or? Oh, no. They. What happened was there was so much blood in my head. And I was the head of the psycho-oncology unit at this hospital in Lubbock, Texas at the time. And so all the physicians knew me, and my husband's a physician, so they all knew us. So when I came in, you can imagine, you know, they have one of their own, how they're just scrambling. And the problem was, is, you know, they did the angiogram, but they couldn't, there was just so much blood in my brain that they told my husband that, you know, I probably would die, that there was just, they didn't, you know, have much hope for what would happen. And basically, I wasn't on any meds. They put me in the ICU, and then the choice came to my husband. You know, we can fly her. Well, the choice didn't come yet. Brain surgeons were at a meeting in a city quite a ways away. So so the people on call decided that maybe a good option would be to fly me to Dallas. It was a bigger hospital there.
Right.
But then they said my husband couldn't go with me. And the only thing I ever, you know, talked to him about death was with these cancer patients. I said, you know, no matter what, Ron, we can never let each other die alone. And I said, no matter what, never let me die alone because I want someone with me.
Right.
And when they told him he couldn't go and that he might die, that I may die en route, He just remembered the passion of that promise, and he said, no, I can't do that. Then let's keep her here. And he started talking with friends from Tufts University and things because he had connections with other, you know, other medical people.
Thank God.
So I laid in the hospital for 3 days until some of that blood resolved. And I think what happened is I became septic.
Yes.
And then I almost died. Oh, it came even closer than I was at that time.
Oh, my goodness. How scary. So you're laying there, and they were really trying to allow the blood to sort of drain, in other words, and see if you're going to improve at all, basically keep an eye on you. And did they rush you to the operating table?
No, they didn't. As a matter of fact, things did get better. Now in retrospect, they know what happened. It was leaking. The blood was never stopped, so it was just leaking. And they were giving me a steroid to help with the brain swelling.
Wow.
And they had me in the ICU, but closer, you know, this happened on a Saturday.
Yeah.
On Tuesday night, I got very sick, and that's actually, well, it was early Wednesday morning. That's actually when I had the experience with God that I remember them waking me up in the middle of the night and telling me that I was very ill.
Right.
And the priest had come several times to give me the anointing of the sick.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, I basically was already talking to God because I submitted to his will. It was so overwhelming in
yes.
the ambulance.
Yes.
I just told God, your will be done. And from that point, I really was not afraid. I wasn't on any medication.
Yes.
And a voice, which I believe now was God, was talking to me. And I would have people coming in and crying and holding me. Yeah. And I basically was looking at them like, and I wanted to tell them, don't cry for me. You know, I'm in a very good place.
Wow.
God's talking to me. But
right.
Anyway,
right.
they... All of a sudden, what I noticed is, they started doing things around my bed, and of course, they had gotten my husband up, and
mm-hmm,
he was
right.
there, and he was crying,
oh.
and I saw this light. I don't have a better. That's a human name for it. I don't have a better name. And that's part of the problem with this
right.
experience, Michelle, because
yeah.
I am a medical person. I'm in
yes.
the field of science, and it's not a human experience. So what makes us look ridiculous for those of us who have a near-death experience is when we come back, we have to put what we saw in a human language. And
right.
it sounds outrageous.
Right.
It sounds,
right.
it gets a corny connotation to it,
true.
Which is part of the reason I wrote the book. Because
mm-hmm.
I thought, okay, I'm just gonna write it so that it won't be changed, and maybe that will help me when someone asks me about the story, I can give them the book, because sometimes when the more people
right.
talk about
exactly.
these things, they change the language to try and connect with the audience more, and it's
right.
they lose what it was.
Right, the gap sort of analysis
mm-hmm.
and kind of thinking over, no, maybe I didn't see that, or maybe I did.
Exactly,
or, yeah,
and I think that's
yeah.
the biggest problem. But you,
mm-hmm.
I saw this light, and it's not a normal light, so I'm telling you
oh,
that now. It's
okay.
nothing like an operating room light or anything else. And when I first saw it, my first question was, what is that?
Right.
And then I started thinking, is that what my patients that have cancer that were dying used to tell me?
Oh,
because
my
it's
goodness.
So odd. It
right.
doesn't fit anything else.
Right.
And then I thought, it's not very impressive. You know, it was quite small. And then the light just grew. And
wow.
And I didn't go into it. It's almost like it just came over me
mm-hmm.
and I was in it.
It came to
and
you,
then
in other words,
I remember
yeah.
moving through it, and it's a very pleasant feeling, and it's a tunnel. The reason I call it a tunnel
right.
is because it's a limited space compared to where you come out. When I came out of that tunnel, then you're in a vast area, and I saw no boundaries in that area. It was forever, as far as I know, and
yeah.
it was absolutely beautiful, and I don't have another
right.
human word for it.
Isn't
it was
fascinating.
Your senses are different. Your eyes don't see the way they
right,
used
right.
to, and your skin, everything comes through your skin, all your senses and everything. If you have skin, you're not looking at your body. You're
right.
you're experiencing it, and there's such a sense of knowingness that if I could have said anything, I probably would have said, "Of course."
Yes.
Of course.
Yes.
And this voice called me by my name, and it said, Mary Jo, you can't stay. And I said, I can't stay. And I started protesting. And I said, why not? You know, I've been a, because there was no doubt I was with God. You know, people
wow.
ask me, how did you know? There's just no doubt. You're on another realm of reality, and you know.
Yes.
And
so you were completely peaceful. You were okay about being there. You were,
oh my God.
Innocent,
and you know, I have two.
Yes.
I have two kids.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I had a
wow.
freshman in college, and I had an eighth grade.
Later. Oh.
I love both of them. I love my husband. I've
sure.
been married to him since I was 20.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
No love was like this love I experienced
mm.
in
yes.
In this place.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
I have to say it was
so is
incredible.
This a, did this have a gender to it, the voice, or was it just sort of a non-gender?
It's such an overwhelming, omnipotent voice. People ask me why I say him.
Mm.
And really, you know, I'm from Italy. My roots are Italian.
Yes,
and,
yes.
You know, we always put a preposition, and God, just as in Germany, it's their God.
Yes.
You know, it's a masculine. It's,
right, right.
It's so omnipotent.
Right.
I don't know. I could say it's an it, but that seems a little bit degrading to me because
it
was able to relate to me in a human way.
Yes.
It's God, and I'm sure it quite has the ability to relate to millions
yes.
at the same time.
Yes, yes.
And it was amazing.
I am just blown away. And I what I love about your book is you are and come from a medical background. And
yes.
you are a psychotherapist. And you in your book you explain, and also your interviews, you've explained I was sort of like, wow, I'm working with cancer patients here who are dying and who are having a tough time, and I see a lot of sickness around me, and I hope that there is a God out there that's going to kind of help them through. But you were never really convinced until you had this experience, right?
Yes. I was probably at the furthest point from God when this happened in my own life. I didn't have a lot of belief anymore. You know, I was working, you work in a cancer center and you see children getting cancer and people that have no one and just the suffering. Mm. And you know, I was on call for them in the middle of the night.
Right.
If Lubbock was a hub city, it gets people, patients from all over little towns that have nobody and no money. And when I would go in and they would be alone and gasping for air, I used to ask myself, you know, how could any loving God allow this? You know, I didn't get it because I made God a human like me. God is not a human like me. God is God, and God can do anything he wants to do. And everything God does is for the benefit of, he loves humankind. He created it. Mm-hmm. I have no doubt. Mm. And things don't look fair on earth, and perhaps they're not fair, but I cannot doubt this source anymore. I know it sees things and knows things I cannot with this brain and this body understand.
Yes. Yes. And therefore there comes faith, you know, and I think in a lot of our religions here, and I'm not putting that down at all because, you know, I was brought up with some religion, you know, we do assign an anthropomorphic God to this essence because that's all we know. You know, we assign the guy with the white hair and the white staff, usually a guy, but there's a lot of, you know, he or she, whoever, but, and we have no clue, in other words, what you're saying. We can't even imagine it because it's not within our ability to imagine within these little materialistic brains that we have on this plane of existence, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Well, you know, and that's it. I really find, Michelle, that it's our bodies that limit us because, you know, we're so tainted by media and magazines. And, you know, I'm in media, and
I
get it. I mean, I understand how we want to be better. We want to look good. We want the good life. But the next world is the good life. But most of us cannot live for that world because we cannot envision it's possible with what we see day to day.
Yes.
But it is possible, and not only is it possible, it is real. It has, you know, I'm a really strong person. I get my ideas, and I'm a leader. There is very little you can do with a person like with me to change my mind.
You're right.
But I am telling you, not only has my mind changed, my whole life has changed. And, you know, you're in psych, and we work hard to get somebody to pick up their socks so that their wife won't divorce them.
And I
make a lot of money for that week after week after week.
Right.
Well, you know, 2 minutes with God, and my whole life has changed.
Isn't that amazing?
It's amazing.
By reading your book, you know, listeners can really understand that better. It is really inspirational. By the way, if you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, my guest here on the couch today is Mary Jo Rapini. She is the author of the extraordinary book. It's called Is God Pink? And Mary Jo really describes her near-death experience after suffering a cerebral aneurysm, and really what happened to her and how she became basically enlightened. I just wanted to ask, oh, by the way, if you wanted to call 323-203-0815 if you have a question for Mary Jo, or if you would like to email me, instant email here at docmichelle@aol.com, docmichelle2ls@aol.com. If you have a question and you don't feel like calling in, putting your voice on the air, that's cool too. Mary Jo, where did you get the title, Is God Pink? I wanted the listeners to understand that.
Yeah, because I do get a lot of people that go, yes, I know it's a woman God. Well, it is a woman and a man, but no, the room is a very when I was talking to God, the room is incredible with the look, and it's got it's so illuminated, but it's a kind of, if you have this bad illumination here in this life, it would hurt your eyes, but it doesn't hurt your eyes because I think our eyes are very different.
Yes.
In Evidence of an Afterlife, he has many stories how people could see behind their head, and people who were blind were still able to explain how it looks.
Yes.
But it's got a very soft pinkish tone. So, you know, since I had it, I have many days where I miss it, where I just feel so lonely for it. And I envision the color, and that's why that color makes me feel so close to that whole experience again, that I had to have something about pink in there.
Yes.
After the aneurysm, we moved to Houston. My husband took over a chairmanship at MD Anderson.
Yes.
And so Houston's a huge city. It's got like 4 million. We went to every paint store trying to find this color because I was very close to that experience for at least a year and a half to 2 years.
Right, right.
And I told him I have to paint one room in my house this color. I just need to go in there so I can sit in there and pray and
that.
Be close again.
Yes,
and
yes.
We couldn't find the I don't think the color exists. The book is printed in a pink. It's got a pink color, but that's not the pink. It's not a pink like we know pink.
Yes.
It's an illuminated, very light, very soft pink.
Well, that's how we describe here, you know, when we're talking about what colors signify, you know, on this plane, you know, pink is love always. So.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And that's, that's and all of the, they have the color work, you know, of energy work and things like that.
Yeah, like the auras.
Exactly. Or if you want to, people who do a lot of the imagery. You know, and they want to heal. They imagine themselves as a pink, bright pink light just flowing through them for health and love. You know. So.
Well, you know, this is odd now that you say that. Mm-hmm. When I moved back to Houston, I left Lubbock a month after the accident because my husband was already working here.
Yeah.
And so we were going to come back to Houston. We had lived here prior to moving to Lubbock.
Yeah.
Well, I found a practice in a very old building because I knew I needed to go back to work because I had such a need to give back now.
Yes.
Like give more.
Yes.
And, and I was walking up the stairs in this building, and there was an old woman at the top of the stairs. So I was walking up the stairs. She was sitting at the bench at the top, and I hadn't written the book yet. This was like 3 months after the accident.
Yeah.
And the woman goes, "My God, who are you?" And I said, I looked at her like, okay, is she psychotic? Or I didn't know who or what she was. And I said, my name is Mary Jo. And she goes, there's an incredible pink light around you.
Wow. Isn't
and
that
so
wonderful?
I said, well, maybe it's coming in from the street. Because, you see, I'm thinking I'm
there
a very logic person.
Yes.
And she goes, no, it's not that kind of a light. And she was so old. I thought, well, gosh, I hope she's not hallucinating or something.
Right.
But she was there to see someone else, and I never saw her again.
Wow.
I went in to look at this office space that someone had offered me, and I came out, and I don't know where she went. I'm sure she was there to meet somebody, but it was so odd.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the odd things that happened. Many odd things happened after.
Yes.
To my husband, too.
Really?
Like, especially when we started... because he's very scientific. He's he's agnostic. Well, he was.
Right. Okay.
He was very agnostic.
Yes.
He didn't know what he believed. He couldn't discount it. He couldn't say yes or no. But during it, he really started changing. And then I think after, he was like, oh, my God. You know, I cannot believe this. I cannot understand this.
Wow,
and
that is
we've
wonderful.
We've had a lot of those moments.
Isn't that wonderful? And when you're counseling, when you're giving therapy to people, say cancer patients or ill people or anyone for that matter who may ask you and say, aren't you the author of that book? Do you share a little bit of your experience? Because I know sometimes as, you know, a therapist myself, it's, you don't want to get too, as they call it, transparent. You know, you don't want to give too much information about your personal life. But I would think in a sense that this is so inspirational and giving of hope to others that it would be okay to share that.
Yes, it just depends, you know, Michelle, probably as you would guess, it just depends on the patient and it depends on what they're asking for. I'm very guarded with it. Only last year did I start actually saying yes to networks, but I don't say yes to most networks. Bob Woodruff with ABC did a special with me in August, and you know, like you already had said, Discovery Health.
Yes.
But I'm very careful because the story is so sacred to me.
Yes.
And I've had a couple churches approach me and ask me if I would speak and talk about Jesus Christ, and I said, well, he was not in the story.
Right.
And I did not see him, even though I'm quite confident that he as well as others were up there. And I'm quite sure that this is a universal God. I am sure he was embracing Muslims, Hindus, Buddhists. There I saw no even concept God would be anything but loving and merciful.
Yes.
I mean, I saw nothing of the kind. It was all it was all full of love. And I, you know, I really was probably at my worst of my furthest away from God at that time.
Yes.
In my
yes.
life.
Yes.
yes.
And maybe the message was to bring you back to that so you could share your information, and that's what you do here and now live with me, and but in all forms of how you put that message out so it's not exploited in any way. And I really respect you for caring about that as well, and the loving treatment you give to your patients and trying to have them it's true. And it's
I think a lot of times when, you know, and I haven't talked to a lot of people that have had these because I don't know. It's so personal that I want to keep it.
Right.
I want to keep it sacred to what happened.
Yes.
That's so important to me to make sure that it's not taken out of context and that it's protected in its honest right of the way it happened. And I realize honest is a relative word, but at least I want it how it happened to me to be correct.
Yes.
So it was a. I'm just very careful when people ask me to talk about it that because I'm not going to convert anybody. The only thing I could convert anybody to is when you say, just try to be as loving and kind to others as you can, because this is not the end. I know this world looks real, but it is not real. In fact, I kept saying to my husband afterwards, oh, my biggest frustration, and I did go through a depression when I came back. I had to talk to like two psychotherapists because I was very depressed about leaving that place, about the difference, and I felt like God had now put me back, and what the heck am I going to do now? How am I ever going to complete this mission? And I still have days where I feel like, is it enough? Am I doing what I'm supposed to? You know, now I know this. How better can I help other people with it? Because I think that's what he does.
Exactly.
I think it gives you this experience, and then it tells you what you need to do, and perhaps the people he tells that to are the people that he mm-hmm. he believes he's going to make that happen. Because
yes.
things, weird things have been happening. I was never going to go into media. Anybody that knew me before would
yes.
say, she even hates to get her picture taken. Like, she will never do that.
Right.
And now you
exactly.
see.
Exactly. But it was this possibly, you know, for a reason for you to, you know, spread this message. And, you know, there are a lot of so many other people who really do nice and wonderful and loving things who are in the media. And
yeah.
and I understand the fear, because there are a lot of people who exploit. And,
yeah.
you know, it's for a commercial. But I love the way you turned your life around. And maybe you can share with us what your thought process is now. And what I understand, it's sort of be there to help people without judgment and just love. In the literature, you know, you read the Lao Tzu, Dalai Lama, and even the Paramahansa Yogananda. You know, you read all these people who've really been vibrating on a very high state and getting
right.
messages. And the messages basically are, try to be as godlike as you can on this plane.
Right.
And that that encumbrance is, you know, there's no judgment. There's love. There's encouragement. There is, you know, peacefulness. There's hope. And
that's right.
Yeah.
That's a big thing, Michelle. The, you know, I the way I'm living now is when I get up in the morning, you know, I used to pray for
yes.
such and such to happen. Now when I get up, I just tell God, thank you in the morning,
right.
and use me. Just use me
yes.
how you see you use me best. And
yes.
some days the way he uses me they're very simple. They're nothing.
Yes.
And other days I'll get a call that I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yes.
Now, I don't know if I really want to do this, but okay, I'll go with it. And
yes.
usually it's those times that I really need to keep thinking, this is not the real world. And
mm-hmm.
when my ego does start getting the best of me, and it does,
mm-hmm,
I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'm still very much human, and I still very much get into all this ego stuff,
yes.
like, I want this, I want that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I remind myself, this is not the real world. And
yes.
and remember what you saw, and remember, this is temporary, because it's very hard to live thinking it's temporary when everything seems so forever here,
yes.
and it's not.
Yes, exactly. It's it's let's see, a spiritual experience in a human body, they say, right?
I think that's really it, Michelle.
Yeah. So there is. So if you were to describe, you know, that understanding, would you just say, you know, that is evidence of spirit? We all have a spirit, an essence that travels
oh, absolutely.
On, that moves on. Did you get any information from the source, as I call it, him? Where we go after that, or if there's a job to do after that, or if we vibrate
well,
into that place?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I didn't get anything like that,
mm-hmm.
but I have a sense that you don't go there and just rest, although you could, because it's another existence. Or for one thing, there's no time. I had no idea about where time was in that whole thing.
Yes.
My husband told me it was probably 2 to 3 minutes, but it just seemed like forever at that
yes.
time. I mean,
yes.
But I'm quite sure that God uses us, and
sure.
whether
sure.
he brings
sure.
us back in another body, or whether he has missions that, you know, I've met people, I've had experiences where, you know, I'm a runner, and I'll be out.
Uh-huh.
One time I remember specifically something pushed me off the road so I didn't get run over, and I have no idea what it was, but I felt it on
yes.
my shoulder.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, I'm very open to those things now. It's not scientific. And,
right.
And this
exactly.
is hard for me, because
yes.
I'm like, okay, this is not logical.
Right.
But it is
exactly.
true.
And it's you feel like, I don't know if I want to share this, because I don't want people to judge me as this person who's like, oh, yes, God talked to me. And, you know.
Right.
I had a client years ago who came in to see me. She had slipped and fallen on a marble floor, and she ended up having to have 90 stitches. She was in she was unconscious
wow.
for 3 months. In the hospital, and she was a mother, young mother, and she shared with me the reason why she came into therapy was because she had an experience very similar to yours. And she said the voice said to her, that essence, that wonderful place, because she wanted to stay there, said, you're not done yet. You need to take care of your children.
Wow.
And she awakened from her, you know, coma she was in. But still, now to tell this story, this sweet little thing has all these stitches all across her head. She has hardly no hair. It's just growing back, you know, and this was years ago. And she said, I just don't want people to think I'm crazy, but I need to talk about this. And I need to share this with other people to give them faith and understanding. So I really, you know, I think that there are people out there like you who have had possible experiences like these, and they need to talk about them or share them and not be shy about, ooh, maybe I'm schizophrenic and I'm hearing voices or seeing things, because the near-death experiences really have a lot of similar characteristics to them.
Oh, they really do. And that Jeffrey Long, who wrote the book Evidence of an Afterlife, and he's working on another one because he's now convinced that there is a God on a science. You know, he's using quantum physics with a lot of his research. But Harper Collins is a publisher for that book. And he told me that, he said, Mary Jo, you know, like, these stories are all, you can't read these stories and not have validity. That, what happened to me is when I, you know, I didn't want to write the book, but I started having these dreams, and they were dreams. They were much different than a near-death experience. But in the dream, I saw the book. I mean, I saw it.
Yes.
And what's fascinating, and I don't know what this means, and I'm not even going to try and judge it, but when I saw the book in my dream, it was exactly the cover of the book the way it is.
Yes.
And what happened with this book is I went with a publishing company called Publish America, and they're kind of like the Walmart of all publishing companies. They publish most things, but they really like this story.
Yes.
And they, what I love about them is they can print in masses, but and very fast. They have these huge printing machines, so you don't have to order a lot of them, because I wasn't sure if anybody would even read it.
Right, right.
And so their editor called me and said, Mary Jo, what do you want the cover to look like? And I said, I don't know. I have no idea, because, you know, I really, it was the words inside. I wasn't, because honestly, I really didn't think the book would attract the attention it has. And so I said, you know what, you know, it has to have something with pink. And I was thinking maybe pink clouds or something like that.
Right.
Because that's what I'd seen in the dreams. And he goes, well, what color do you want the ink that says, is God pink, dying to heal? And I said, I don't care. Just surprise me.
Right.
The book came with pink and the clouds and the royal blue lettering. Which I cannot believe it is exactly what the dream was.
Wow.
It was amazing. If that was the power of my mind or I don't know. But that was a dream. That that wasn't, you know, because they try to liken these near-death experiences with it. They're not, these are not dreams, NDEs. They are real.
Right. You know, and the skeptics who may be listening right now and the many scientists, you know, they say, oh, well, these are biological or chemical processes, you know, that are going on in the brain, and we all have this because certain brain centers shut off and it produces this feeling of going through a tunnel, and then of course we're going, you know, that kind of thing. And but in your book, and you know, also Dr. Jeffrey Long's book, The Evidence of Afterlife, there are, you know, he did thousands of interviews for his book of research with people who had near-death experiences, and they the blind people who had NDEs were reporting visual experiences that they would never have, per se, on this plane, that when they went into that realm of being, you might say, that they all reported similar experiences. So,
and, you know, they had never seen Michelle. Yeah. So how would, when they say, I saw an illuminated room, how would they even know what that looked like?
Exactly.
I'm so fascinated by that. But now I know. I know exactly how they know.
Yes.
But, you know, I do have to say, I work with a lot of those researchers. I work with with Dr. Moody, who is in Oregon. He's
Oh my
a grandfather
gosh.
Of these. So
he
because
is.
I'm in the sciences, I embrace the skeptics. I mean, I will do anything to help understand what these are. And even in the event that they found out that there was some link that made you experience them, that will not discredit the God that held me.
Yes.
Because that God is my creator, and it's real. And if my brain did something that enhanced my ability to connect with my creator, then I am even more grateful to my body that that was, you know, programmed into my brain.
That's
because
amazing.
What these scientists understand is, okay, these things may indeed be programmed into our brain, but who programmed them?
Exactly.
We're right back.
Right back at you. Right.
I'm fine with that.
Yes. Yes. And so you are in touch and working with Raymond Moody's.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh my gosh.
He came to MD Anderson in Houston to give a talk, and I could not meet him, but he's one of the first ones that wrote to me. I had written an article in the archives, the Archives of Surgery and Psychiatry picked it up. It was about when your spouse has a near-death experience or comes close to death. It was written for physicians.
Yes.
And he picked it up and read it,
goodness.
And he contacted me, and he sent me, because I was in a real state of almost like high anxiety. I couldn't believe that I had this, because it didn't fit who I was as a person, and I was the biggest skeptic, and I was depressed that I couldn't stay there.
Yes.
And, you know, I looked terrible after it. My face was lopsided, and I didn't know who I was anymore. And he sent me this thing about people that have near-death experiences seven similarities in the people afterwards. And for the first time, I read this list, and I identified that. I said, okay,
I'm
not abnormal. I'm like them.
Yes.
And then I started getting stronger and more confident. Like, it's okay then. I'm not an outcast. I'm just going through this process of trying to understand what happened.
Exactly.
And he really normalized it for me, and I'm so grateful to his research.
Well, that book Life After Life came out, I think, in 1975. I remember reading it in 75, and then he founded the International Association for Near-Death Studies. That was like in the early 80s, and that was, everybody was, oh, that's so cool, and this and that. But this was based on scientific evidence as well, a lot of it. So,
well, I had never heard of him until that I got that email from him in 2003, and it was in September, October 2003.
Well, and you have given so much love and work to your patients, and now you're bringing it out there. If there's just a couple of things that you have really learned and how you have changed in your life after your near-death experience, what would you tell listeners?
The thing that's changed the most in me is I believe I've always, you know, I was number 6 of 9 kids, and I was always pretty good at sharing, and you know, I didn't have much, and I was always pretty good at that, but I was also very self-focused, and this experience taught me very clearly that we are all connected, and if something happens in Japan, that I have their soul within me too, and I should feel bad, and I should feel hurt, and I should try to help, and we can do that on a very small scale just by being kind. I really focus on doing one kind thing a day anonymously. Whenever I can, and I have the energy, I do it.
Yes.
Whether I've had a bad day or a good day, I do it because I know this is not the real world.
Yes. Yes.
And I, more than ever, Michelle, I'm living for the next life, and that has helped me be a better person.
That's beautiful. And this is not to say, this is not the real thing, but this is, it's not to say, and this is exactly how I understand you, I hope, is not to say, you know, oh, we're just passing through and,
in fact, you have to take life more seriously,
yes.
I think, because you realize that because this is not the real world, this is your only chance.
Yes.
I think the next world you're in for a very long, forever.
Mm.
But
yes,
this one is temporary, and you are making your mark now.
Right.
And it doesn't matter when you die how many people, you know, sing your praises
because
you gave a lot of money or you had a lot of money.
Yeah.
What's really important are those people that didn't have anything and you were able to do one nice thing for them.
Yes, yes. And the thought on this plane of love, if you want to measure it in those, who does the book, on the vibrations, that's the closest level we can get to the possible experience as described as the God experience in near-death experiences, that high vibration of the love that we can give on this plane. Because like you said, we are all connected.
It's absolutely true. I know that in my heart of hearts now. And I think the other thing is I have no fear of death anymore.
How wonderful.
I mean, if I found out I had breast cancer, I would be afraid of the treatment because I know what they have to do to me.
Yes.
I know I've got to lose my hair. I know I've got to lose my breasts. And I know that's going to be painful.
Yes,
but I know this God. I mean, I know he's waiting for us. And I know in my heart that you are not going to leave this earth until he is absolutely ready. You cannot will it. I used to think you could will it. You cannot will it.
Right, right.
Because I wanted to go.
Yeah, you were ready to go. And
yes, I was ready to pack and go.
And if people were to live, I'm feeling so good up here. I really want to stay. I'm okay about it. People who commit suicide, let's say, that's really pretty much shutting them down. They're brain dead and they can't breathe anymore. And I don't even know the speculation behind that. Does the loving God say, boy, you really, or is there a judgment going on? It's just come on down.
I don't know, because I don't think there's any judgment in the being that held me.
Yes.
Maybe there is, but I sure didn't experience it.
Right.
Because if it was judgment, I had a lot of sins he could have started on, and he never did.
No.
He embraced me, and he was 100% there for me. I was not a squeaky clean person going
well,
to
who
him.
Is, you know, I mean,
well, really. I mean, I think a lot, this one Don Piper says all the time, well, you know, I was ready to go because I was a preacher and I lived a godly life.
Yes,
I can't say that. I can't say I was living a godly life at the time that this happened.
Right, right. That is so honest. And I really appreciate your being so honest with everybody out there and sharing this information and stuff. By the way, if you just tuned in, my guest today, Mary Jo Rapini, she's a psychotherapist and, of course, author. Her extraordinary book's called Is God Pink? Talks about her near-death experience after suffering a cerebral aneurysm. You have spread the word, and you're going to be on Oprah show, I understand, next year to talk about.
Well,
your
that's
book.
What they're projecting. I'm not really sure the context. They just asked if they could take the clips of the Beyond Belief segment, and Oprah wanted to do something. And you know, I'm really glad because people like that have a lot of power and a lot of. People, a lot of us viewers that need that hope and inspiration, we look for, when you put something like that on national TV, you're making a statement.
Yes.
And it's not some crap or something to get, you know, something more or making fun of people. It's really something to help and encourage, and that's what I want more of on TV. That's my whole bent with TV, and that's what I'm doing.
Yes, that's wonderful, and that's a wonderful mission. Why not use that vehicle that we have it now, and the internet as well, you know,
absolutely.
To share the blissful experiences that possibly await us all, you know.
That's right. And Michelle, you can do that. You know, I'm a sex therapist, and I find that talking about healthy relationships and couples and marriage and the importance of commitment, You can take any topic and help these young people. A lot of young people have no good mentors. They look to the TV for mentors.
Right. And, you know, it is true. And they're not such good mentors. And, of course, the reality shows are terrible. I think some of these messages.
I watch that stuff all the time, and I just think to myself, what are we doing?
Oh, exactly. That's the worst. By the way, we are going to have to get wrapped up here in a little bit, but I just wanted to let everybody else know, too. And you talked about the, you know, empowering women and the men, you know, who love them and they love.
Yes.
Mary Jo's the author of Start Talking, A Girl's Guide for You and Your Mom About Health, Sex, or Whatever. It's a great book to help you out, learn how to talk to your daughters and you know, let them feel free to share with you their feelings and fears. Also, she's got a great DVD series, Keeping Your Mojo Through Midlife, Strategies for Improving Libido, which is a great tape as well. And
it's for couples. It works really well if both husband or boyfriend and wife look
Neat.
At it.
And if everybody would like to get in touch with you, which I'm sure they will now, and read your book and also maybe get more in touch with how you empower women, help relationships, help young people, what's the best way to get in touch with you, Mary Jo?
It's probably through my website. Mm-hmm. It's maryjorapini.com. And Joe is just J-O.
Mm-hmm. And Rapini is R-A-P-I-N-I, just like it's
R-A-P, just like the vegetable.
Yeah, there you go.
Yep. Rapini Greens, it's the same thing.
Yes.
I'm named after a vegetable.
That's great. Easy to remember that way. Anyway, thank you so much for being on the show, Mary Jo. It's been such a pleasure, and I really hope that a lot of listeners out there, if you have questions or comments, do contact Mary Jo. Buy her book. Get into all the proceeds. Go to charity. This is how Mary Jo is.
Thank you, Michelle.
All right, Mary Jo Rapini, by the way, thank you again, and have a lovely day, and we'll talk again soon, hopefully.
Well, thanks. And Michelle, the same to you. And thanks for your really sensitive and insightful questions. Aww. It makes all the difference.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Have a lovely day now and weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Again, Mary Jo Rapini, my guest, the author of Is God Pink, describing her near-death experience as a woman who works in the medical field and also a psychotherapist. Check it out. It's a great book. Of course, you can log on here to docmichelle@aol.com if you have any more questions. Or, of course, tomorrow the show will be available for downloads. And as always, it's free on iTunes. So you can check it out in your iPod. Mm-hmm. That's as of tomorrow morning. All right, have a great day. You can get off the couch if you like, or you can stay on. We got more great shows coming up for you. Dr. Michelle here saying have a wonderful weekend, and do take care of yourself first, and then you can take care of others. That's the way it works. Bye-bye. Have a good day.